Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut. Yo, what's going on, Sports City? It's your boy Sirius. And yo, typically, we jump on Tuesdays, but I asked the powers that be to let us jump in a day early because we got so much to break down from the weekend that was. Before we get cracking, the calling number is 929-477-2759. You got the next 60-plus minutes with your boys here at Sports City. We got a lot to break down, man, from the Saturday games to what took place Sunday. We may even dive into the ramifications behind that. But before we get cracking, y'all know I don't do this by myself, man. I got the co-host, man, calling out of Connecticut area, Barry the Villain Jordan. What's going on, my gosh? What's up to the people?
Super villain. What's up, man? What a weekend. So we definitely had to do this a day early. We couldn't let this marinate for a full day. We had to get into it today. I'm glad to be on the show with you, Sirius. I hope you're doing well. Little Malik, Uncle Villain's here for you. What's cracking, brother?
You know what, man? It's been a day. It's been a day. Work was a piece of work, and, you know, you remember that Kevin Hart sketch where he was talking about, you know what I'm saying, you get home and you see that baby with all that energy and you want to get back in the car and go throw boxes at the wall. I get home today and my little man has all kinds of energy. And, you know, my wife was, you know, busy trying to do her thing or whatever. So life with a toddler, man, it's never boring, man. But with that being said, my guy, I'm not going to waste anybody's time. Let's dive right into it. I'm going to start with the Saturday games. Because quite frankly, we could spend the whole show talking about what took place on Sunday. But the first game I'm going to talk to you about, man, obviously is the Tennessee Titans and the Cincinnati Bengals squaring up at Nissan Stadium in Tennessee. There are so many different angles we can take from this game, but for me, Villain, I'm going to leave Ryan Tannehill alone for a minute because
okay.
Because really, you know what I'm saying, if we're slicing up this pie and we're talking about what took place, Ryan Tannehill is going to get the biggest piece. So I want to talk about a couple of things surrounding Ryan Tannehill before we start slicing and dicing Ryan Tannehill. First and foremost, I think Mike Vrabel, in my opinion, did this team a very, very, very terrible disservice because there were several times on fourth and one, third and one, that you have Derrick Henry in the game and you either do not give him the ball or a play is called that has Derrick Henry bouncing to the outside. When you're that big of a back and you got a inches to go or a 1 yard to gain, I'm not understanding why you don't put your foot in the ground and drive and pick up the yard. Like, it felt like either the play calling was pitiful or Derrick Henry was running scared. But what was your take on what took place from that perspective, and then we'll break it down piece by piece in a little bit.
I mean, I don't know. You know, the buck stops with the head coach, right? So, I mean, you do have to kind of shine a light on Mike Vrabel, a guy that we kind of talked about should be in the Coach of the Year discussion, right? I think there's a lot of second guessing that you can levy against the Titans and Mike Vrabel. I mean, from, you know, Henry, you know, 20 carries he didn't look like the old Henry, but he looked pretty good. I think the goal line call to throw it with Tannehill instead of running it, trying to get a little bit too cute, was a problem. I think getting Foreman only 4 carries was a mistake. So I think there was a lot of play calling that is questionable. But I look at I kind of say they played not to lose. They didn't play to win. If you know what I mean, like, I felt like they just wanted to protect home court or home field in this case, and didn't want to lose the game. I don't think they were as aggressive as they normally are, and I think, you know, part of it was the quarterback. I don't think they had enough faith in him to be that aggressive. But you know, the defense did everything it possibly could. But it felt like the Bengals weren't going away, and I think the Titans kind of got tight because of that. And I think their play calling and decision-making got tight because of that, because the Bengals weren't going away. So I kind of agree with you. It's hard to levy it all on Vrabel, but to your point, he's the head coach. The buck stops with him, right?
Right. So for me, I'm going to go back and forth with you for a minute. You do got a call in queue. I definitely want to get in and get the caller's take on it. But for me, I agree with you, honestly, that the Tennessee Titans really got cute. But here's the deal. Like, and again, although for me, I'm dragging Tennessee, this was the first time in a very long time that they had all of their weapons, like all of them. Like, A.J.
Right.
Brown was playing, Julio was playing, Derrick Henry was playing, you know, the defensive line and you know, was intact. And I'm not going to say too much anything about their defense, because their defense played well enough for them to win that ball game. But I really don't get it. Like, you know what, this is the first time that you have all your weapons on display and you play like that on the offensive side of the ball. Like, the Cincinnati Bengals, I you know, they're a decent squad. Don't get it twisted. But that secondary can be had and has been had before. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not understanding why you don't spread them out and go down the field. Like, you hit the nail on the head. The fact that Foreman only touched the ball 5 times is disgraceful. I don't understand why you didn't give him more carries. But with that being said, I'm going to get the caller in queue. Friend of the program, Seth, what's going on, my guy? Welcome back to the Rapid Show. How are we doing this evening, man?
All right. What's going on, boys? How you doing?
Good.
I'm good, man. So we're sitting there breaking down the Tennessee Titans Cincinnati Bengals game. And, again, I'm going to leave Ryan Tannehill alone for a second. But when you look at that ball game, what were you thinking, and how did you feel that game unfolded for the Tennessee Titans?
No, I mean, I just caught the tail end of what you were saying, and I think, like you said, you had all the weapons. I mean, you saw that great touchdown that A.J. Brown had, that back shoulder, one-handed kind of catch into his chest. I mean, you got to take more shots down the field. You got to get Foreman more touches. I feel like every time he was getting the ball, he was ripping off, you know, 7-8 yards. I think he had like a 40-yard carry or something like that. I mean, he looked explosive. And, you know, to give him only would you just say 7 carries? I mean, that's inexcusable. The guy's running the ball well. You got to give it to him. I mean, you know, or take shots down the field. But I feel like it was just so many, you know, short possessions, you know, and just Tannehill. You know, it was not good. I mean, you got all the weapons back. You their offense was good when they had everybody available. So it's just a poor offensive showing in my mind.
I actually agree with you. I will say this, you know, the offensive line for the Tennessee Titans really didn't play well. You know what I'm saying? Like, both quarterbacks were getting smacked around. So, you know, when you start trying to develop, you know, long routes down the field, you need the time to do it. But with that being said, I still can't give up, you know, what they gave up and make excuses for what took place, especially the play calling. We do got another chef in the building, Mr. Harvey, man, calling out of the 615. Man, what's going on, my guy? How we doing this evening, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You talk about the Tennessee
about
Titans,
game?
Man. Talk about that Titans game, man. Give me how you feel about it.
Well, you know, it was really interesting. I saw a post from a guy who I respect today that was actually defending Ryan Tannehill.
You know, I'll step away from my phone in a second. You say the dude was defending Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah.
Who was defending him?
It's not necessarily a media person, but a former athlete, somebody who I do respect his opinions. He played sports himself, but I'm not going to go into that right now. I'm going to say that they choked that game away, man. I think. Listen, when we talk about keys for Tennessee to win that game, we talked about being able to get pressure on Joe Burrow and harass him. That they did. They sacked this man 9 times. They did all the things that they needed to do. They limited them to field goals. They did everything except for lose the turnover battle 3-1. And they were in key spots. Like, it felt like when he threw that interception inside the 10-yard line that, well, that's it. But then they pulled him out of the fire and gave him another shot. And 2 plays after making a good throw, he throws another one. That's 3, bro. Like, no. That's you, bro. But as a system, let's stop wondering, you know, saying we need to fire the OC and all these other things going on, which may still happen. But, no, man, you bummed this one out. Like, no. That's bad quarterback play.
Yeah.
And I put a lot on Tannehill's shoulders. Listen, Derrick Henry wasn't completely himself, but he did come out and give an effort. Foreman ran the ball all right. Guys made plays when you could make the throws, but they did everything, man. All you needed to do was to have a decent game at the quarterback position. You'd have won the game. But you didn't.
So now Tennessee
is 0-2 as number one seed in the playoffs.
And you know, serious, it was kind of a joke, right?
Dylan, before you go, let me get this other caller in queue. He's patiently waiting. Calling out of the 973 area code. What's going on, man? What's your name? Welcome to the NFL Wrap-Up Show. How are we doing this evening?
Thank you, gentlemen. This is Lou from New Jersey. I've been on this show before.
What's going on, Lou?
This has got to be the wildest, weirdest weekend I've ever seen since I've been covering pro football, or for any sport for that matter. I mean, I have never seen those games come down to the wire, all 4 games in just this past week. I mean, this has got to be the best postseason week I've ever seen.
Definitely.
I think everybody can concur on that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it all.
If you missed this,
the show goes on.
Yeah.
But go ahead, my man.
If you missed this, you can't call yourself a football fan. Believe me. If you miss any of that, you're not a fan. Believe me.
Definitely. We're gonna talk about it all as the show goes on. But Villain, you were about to say something, right? So I want to give you the opportunity to, you know, finish your thought before we press on.
Yeah, I mean, you had mentioned it when we were all texting together, like, already. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the first play of the game, you're at home, you're the one seed, the crowd is into it, going crazy, the first play of the game. The first play of the game, a pick. I mean, like, he took himself out of the game, I felt like, and kind of left the coaching staff with little to no option but to really be kind of tight and conservative, because how can you trust Tannehill? I mean, and you look at just the whole landscape of the AFC, right? You got dogs at quarterback, right, which we'll get to later. Tannehill is not going to be the guy to lead you. You can't trust him going up against – if you have him going up against Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, you can kiss your season goodbye. And he – and the three picks, yeah, the three picks, that's the realization of the AFC. It's not a game. Like Joe Burrow, to Mike's point, I haven't seen a quarterback get this beat up in a playoff game since my quarterback, Eli Manning, against the San Francisco 49ers, right? He took a beating. And listen, last week, me and you, Sirius, sat here and said we were wrong about the Bengals drafting Ja'Marr Chase over Swell, right?
But you saw
why they needed a lineman, because the lineman got him beat up. And for him to be as resilient as he was, that's a kid. That's a second-year kid out of LSU who's been balling for 3 years straight doing that. And Tannehill's been in this league long enough. You can't have a game like that. I'm not laying the blame at Tannehill's feet, but you know what? If it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. I mean, to Mike's point, that defense did kept them out of the end zone, got after Burrow, and all you had to do was take care of the game, and he didn't do it.
Barry, I'm not laying it at his feet. I'm draping it around his shoulders.
I like how that works.
It's a fact, though. I agree. I mean, it's hard to say one guy lost the game. But, I mean, like you said, you just had to take care of the ball. You just had to make better decisions. And then, you know, you got to run the ball inside the 5-yard line at the goal line instead of trying to get cute and throwing a pass. I mean, you got Derrick Henry, you got Foreman, you got beasts out there. Why are you trying to be cute and throw it to your fifth option? Like, doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Shouldn't have gone for two.
Definitely.
Should have just taken the court.
Definitely. Seth, you've been awfully quiet back there, my guy. What's your thoughts on the situation before we shift it over to the Cincinnati side of the football?
No, just looking at the box score again, I mean, if Foreman only had 4 rushing attempts for 66 yards, I mean, how does he not get more carries? You know, Henry, like I think Mike said, you know, Henry definitely didn't look like himself. I mean, coming off that tough injury, I think he only missed, 8 weeks? So, I mean, it's amazing he even came back for the playoff game, but I mean, Foreman, you got to get him more carries, and you can't have the ball in Tannehill's hands. You know, you can't have it with the game on the line in his hands. You know, I think you had to run it more. Look, AJ Brown was balling, but I mean, Julio was okay. But at the end of the day, I mean, they were all over Burrow, like Barry was just saying. I mean, you got 9 sacks, and he just kept bouncing back. I mean, you have to find a way to win at home. Fans going crazy. It was the bad Tannehill that showed up. I mean, you saw last year he was lights out, but you know, this year he was really up and down, more down than up. But it was a tough way to go out. You know, it was a tough way, and Cincinnati, you give all the credit to them.
Definitely. Let's flip it on the side here and talk about Cincinnati side of things. Cincinnati, you know, found a way to get out of there with the win. Joe Burrow threw for about 348. They really couldn't run the ball well. Obviously, that rush defense of the Tennessee Titans came to play. The chemistry between he and Ja'Marr Chase is insane. It's insane. I'm not speaking hyperbole here, but if this continues, this will be the next, you know, Reggie Wayne, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill type of combo because of what they're able to do and the camaraderie that they have. but they found a way ultimately. What has this taught you about the Cincinnati Bengals? I mean, did we learn anything, or, you know, is this par for the course with how their season has been going? I'm going to go in reverse order first. Lou, give me your opinion or your position on the Cincinnati Bengals side of things.
Well, like I said, the Bengals, I think, surprised a lot of people this year. I mean, Burrows has really become, you know, what everybody thought he was going to be, and he really helped the team get to this point. I didn't think they were going to get this far, though. I thought maybe it would have been, like, you know, in the wild card and out, but they have shown they really stepped up this year. So it was very, very, very surprising. Although I think if, you know, Burrows wasn't hurt last year, they would have went this far as well, because the only thing that got him was Burrows' injury, because their record, you know, last year, it was a lot better than what it actually indicated to be. You know, even though it was only 1-15, but they play a lot better than the 1-15 team. But they have really stepped up this year. This could be a big team in the future. After being a joke,
you know,
for so long.
As a Steeler fan and the member of the AFC North, this Cincinnati Bengals team disgusts me. Because once again, Joe Burrow, like you alluded to, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a problem. You know, so I hate them. I hate
who's
the color
the bigger
orange.
Problem? You
gonna
have,
what?
You're gonna have orange and black nightmares. Orange and black nightmares for the next 10 plus years.
I hate you both. Just an FYI. Aww. But since you want to talk, Zillin, man, talk to me about how you feel about Cincinnati, man. You know, they came up with the win there. Did we learn anything from Cincinnati,
wow,
or was this par for the course of how their season's been going so far?
I don't think it's par for the course. I think that's a kind of like a vague statement. I think last week you know they arrived. I think this week you learned they're not going anywhere. They're not a fluke. This is a damn good team. Zach Taylor is a damn good coach. You know, the defense is like, it's almost like the no-name defense of the Miami Dolphins from the 70s, right? There's nobody out there that really puts fear in your heart. Like, years ago, they had really good defensive line play, right? And then, but now they just, they're kind of an uneven defense. They scheme, give Luke their defensive credit, coordinator credit. They scheme on a team, and they switch how they play. They play zone. They play man. They play cover two. They play cover zero. However they need to devise a way to, they're going to do it. And that defense is flexible enough to play different ways, right? So give that defense credit. The Titans, like Mike said, did everything they could. They limited them to field goals, kept them out of the end zone, got after Burrow, but Burrow kept getting up. And what I love about Joe Burrow is like what I loved about Eli Manning. Nothing fazes him. Like Joe Montana, nothing fazes him. He's just, he got beat up this whole game, got the ball back with 20 seconds, calmly went down the field, got, and you know, the kicker said, we about to win this game. This team is scary. Do I expect them to move to the Super Bowl? Probably not. Would I be surprised if they did? No, I wouldn't. Because this team, they have everything they need to get where they got the coach, they got the quarterback, they got weapons on offense, the defense is playing really well. This Bengal team, we joke with you, Sirius, that they're going to be a thorn in the side of the Steelers, but this team is not going anywhere. This team is for real, and God help them if they start drafting and getting an offensive line. Hoo boy.
Definitely. Yeah. Seth, I'm going to come to you, my guy. You know, Cincinnati Bengals get the dub there 19-16. You kind of heard what, you know, the people before you have said about it, but I want to get your opinion. You know, Cincinnati, man, talk to me about them.
I got two things for you here. First of all, how good is Joe Burrow? I mean, he's coming back from a torn ACL. I mean, he doesn't look any worse for the wear. You know, he's moving around in the pocket really good. He's getting destroyed back there. I mean, they're all over him, taking shots, bouncing back up. I mean, he doesn't look
skittish back there, you know, afraid to get hit. He's just really impressive out of him. And secondly, can we get some kind of like a 40-yard dash, Ja'Marr Chase against Tyreek Hill? Because Chase is just like, he catches the ball, makes one cut, and it's just like his speed is insane. I mean, he made there was a catch the other day. It had to be maybe like a, I don't know, 10, 15-yard out or something, and he just turned, caught the sideline, and I thought he was gone. I think he got knocked out just inside the 20 or something like that, but he is impressive. I mean, it was, you know, heck of a player in college, and I know they were, I think the scouts were, he had a rough combine, I think, right, and they were saying that the size of the ball was affecting him or something like that.
Yeah, he couldn't catch.
A lot of question
marks. He couldn't catch in the preseason. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but it's like, you know, it was kind of down on him. And, I do a lot of, like, fantasy football. And, you know, there was, people weren't so high on him, you know, because of that. And, I mean, man, it just, what a season he's had. I mean, what a postseason he's had, too. So, just really impressive from him as a rookie anyway. I mean, you know, let alone any kind of veteran putting up those kind of numbers.
Definitely. And before we move on, Mr. Harvey, I definitely wanted to get your take on it. Cincinnati Bengals, I mean, you got two of your old teammates and LSU going at it, you know, on the same squad, so I know you're excited. You know what I'm saying? You give me a Go Tigers, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to
Go Tigers for sure, man. But real quick, I told you, not only did Joe Burrow recover in 6 months, but he knew he needed more arm strength, and you can see it on his passes this year, period. So he improved his game as well as coming back from that knee injury. People that watched him at LSU, he had the great year. The year before, he showed a lot of toughness and earned his teammates respect. He was tough that year, too. Joe Burrow has always answered challenges. I love how he's unflappable. And with all due respect to Shane Douglas back in the old ECW days on the East Coast, it's Joey franchise in some ways in Cincinnati, man. And we've talked about it, right? This is one of the four or five most fortunate teams in the league right now to have this franchise quarterback and to be able to give him a special weapon like Ja'Marr Chase. Like, we talked about being wrong, they didn't draft a line, and now you got to go to work and build that line. And the other thing that I want to say is what he showed me in this game too, though, even though they settled for field goals and stuff, he's starting to continue to further build his relationship with T. Higgins as well. Higgins made some important plays in this game.
Yeah.
And if he gets on the same page with both of those guys, both have very athletic and are special talent. And so if he gets on the page with multiple guys on that team and can play with them long enough to really get that camaraderie down, you're going to see some pinball machine type numbers with that offense. And it's funny because we talk about, and rightfully so, we talk about Holmes, and we talk about Josh Allen and how we're going to get to that and how it looks like they've arrived. I don't think that they're ready yet, and I expect them to maybe not necessarily play as great this weekend, but, when you take a franchise to new heights, Joey Burrow is looking like he is about definitely deserving of a seat at that table.
I mean, there's a couple quarterbacks, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, you got Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, but Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and, you know, this is just the AFC.
Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's –
yeah, remember him?
Man.
The top movement of
quarterback. I'm not too sure about Lamar Jackson because he's not an
slander. He's an MVP. Stop the slander.
Here's my point. We got Brady and Rodgers on their way.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we got Brady and Rodgers on their way out. We know that's about to happen. Some other guys are older, and there's some guys kind of stuck in the middle like the Dax of the world. But Mahomes is, right now, to me, the best in the game, but at that table, you got him and you got Josh Allen, and then you got to start looking at, like, this next generation of guys. To me, I think I look Joe Burrow, and then I mention Herbert and Lamar Jackson, not in any particular order, but and all five of those guys are from the AFC. That's a third of your quarterbacks and over half the franchise guys in the league, really. Like, the AFC is about to Listen, if they don't find those guys in the NFC, if Justin Fields doesn't develop or Kyler Murray doesn't continue, they're going to have to find those guys to match him, because the future is bright at the quarterback position for young AFC, for AFC franchises.
For some, I definitely agree with you. Just the fact that I'm not putting Lamar Jackson in that class. I can't. He's not an accurate throw of the football. Nobody.
No, you've got slander. He's an MVP series.
No,
you got to give him some respect.
Hold up. No, I don't.
No, you do. No, I don't. He's an MVP. It doesn't matter if he's not an accurate thrower of the football. He's an MVP when he's in the game with the Ravens, they win games. It doesn't matter how he does it. Put some respect on his name. Don't do that. Don't do that.
First and foremost, I am not, because this is the same dude who sat there and tried to tell me that Russell Westbrook deserves his flaws because he's MVP, and that dude is some garbage. Okay, so don't sit there trying to tell me because he's an MVP, though, he deserves flowers. He can't throw the football accurately. He doesn't make defensive reads, and he's an MVP because he runs the football. Here's the thing. If you want me to give you statistics, I can give you statistics.
Okay, you're a Steeler fan, right? You're a Steeler fan?
That's irrelevant, bro. We got a lot to get to.
I'm not going to get into this argument with you right now. We'll do it. We will do it Wednesday. No, we'll do it Wednesday because we got a lot to get to.
I'm not doing it.
Well, Wednesday, cookout.
Come to the cookout. Yeah, we're good. What time?
We got
three more games to go. Come on, we can go hard on this. We can go hard on this Wednesday.
I'm going to.
All right, let's go.
I'm going to. You can't sit there and tell me.
Your opinion. Let's get to the other game. I got all day.
Anyways, the Green Bay Packers dropped another one. You know, San Fran did it to him again. So here's the thing. Everybody's going to talk about where Aaron Rodgers is going to go, who's doing well with Aaron Rodgers, and this, that, and the third. I ain't got time for that right now. My man's villain got me hyped, and I want to go through a phone and pop him in his head. With that being said, 13-10. Lou, I'll come to you first, man. Give me your opinion and your position on this game that took place on Saturday between the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers.
Well, that was a surprise to me. I thought Rodgers, and you know, playing at home in Green Bay, and you know, weather being the factor, I think San Francisco had a chance. I was very surprised by the low scoring turnout. I thought it'd be more of an offensive game rather than defense. So this game went the complete opposite of what I was going for, and San Francisco came away with the victory. I was not expecting it at all. It did not go the way I expected. I think a lot of people might have thought the Packers might have went to and would have, you know, been more of an offensive type of game, but that was not the case. So this was the big stunner of the week, as far as I'm concerned.
My man said it was the big stunner of the week, man. And the San Francisco 49ers in the playoffs are 4-0 currently against the Green Bay Packers, but. You know, it's crazy when you start to look at it. But, Harvey, I'll come to you. She's coming to you next, man. San Francisco gets the dub, knocks Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs yet again. Talk to me about it, man. How you feel?
So, I told you guys a couple months ago, I said I think it's worth pointing out that never as the number one seed under Aaron Rodgers has Green Bay advanced to the Super Bowl. And I'll be honest with you. Just like I did in the Titans game, and I understand that I'm into this trap about quarterback getting too much blame when a team loses. I'm like you. Right now, I don't give a good damn about the postseason. I mean about what happens in the offseason. I'm talking about right now. You had a first drive, and you got the ball in the end zone to start the game off. Looked like you were going to move down the field and be in business. And you mean to tell me MVP with Devonta Adams on the field and all those weapons couldn't find a way to put the ball in the end zone even one more time over the course of that football game? That would have won it. You did enough to let them hang around, and then you messed around and got a field goal block and a punt block for a touchdown. You did enough to let them hang around, and then flukes happen, and, you know, you end up losing the game. I mean, listen, I'm not shocked. I will say this. My whole thing about Aaron Rodgers is he will still qualify to me as a top three quarterback in the league, but from now on, the sentence of Aaron Rodgers, the best quarterback in the league, you can miss me with that from now on, forever. He's great, one of the best.
He won an MVP, though. Remember that, he won an MVP, though.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the truth. I would take him in New Orleans next year. I ain't going to lie to you. But that being said, like, it has been conventional wisdom by a lot of people that he is the best quarterback. And even some of the last few years, that he's been called the best quarterback. All I'm saying is miss me with that from now on. You had everything. You had home field. You had a team that wasn't able to produce much offensively. Your defense did everything. This roster brought everybody back and made one last run at it, and now $40-some-odd million over the cap in the offseason. So they're going to have to make some whole changes. This was their last hurrah at it. And everybody else on that team did what needed to be done for you to win that game. And you needed to play like an MVP quarterback and make a few plays. And he didn't do it.
Here's the funny thing about that, though. Like, did he need to play like an MVP quarterback? And you know what I'm saying? When you look at how that game unfolded, okay, so the Green Bay Packers defense, you know, played exceptionally well. You needed to make a throw. Maybe two throws.
Yeah, get it in the end zone one time.
Get off a clean punt or block a kick or, you know, block a defender on special teams. And we're talking about probably Green Bay hosting an NFC Championship game. You know what I'm saying? Like it's weird because people are going to lay this at the feet of Aaron Rodgers. And for me, I mean, albeit he did not play well, don't get it twisted. But I have a hard time laying it all at the feet of Aaron Rodgers when especially, you know, he did what he normally does, you know, in these type of games. You know, he's pedestrian, so to speak, but he doesn't hurt you. You know, I mean, he completed, you know, all of 9 passes, threw for 255 yards. You know, he got sacked a bunch of times, but, you know.
But some of it was
Devonta Adams.
I'm just saying, man. Like you got to be able to get it down one more time, man. You got to be able to punch that ball in the end zone one more time. You don't have to play like an MVP, but you got to be able to do that. I'm sorry. I understand other things could have happened, bro. But like, you're the MVP with this guy on the field. You got to be able to do that, man.
And
he made some bad decisions and held on too long.
On the flip side, Jimmy G, you know, 131 yards, an interception, sacked a bazillion times, a QBR under, you know, what was that? QBR is 11.9, stats that villain hate. You know, but he's going on. I saw a post the other day that Josh Allen threw 9 touchdowns, no interceptions in 2 games, and he's watching Jimmy Garoppolo compete in the NFC Championship game. Unbelievable.
Right.
Speaking of villain, man, give me a position on this game, man. 13-10, Green Bay goes down yet again, man. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, me and Sears are going to fight after the show. I'm going to drive down to wherever you are, Sears. We're going to fight. Mike, you guys are right. Aaron Rodgers is not the reason why they lost this game, right? But he ain't the reason why they would have won either. How many playoff games can you say Aaron Rodgers won you? Like, Aaron Rodgers is the reason they won that game. He's won 11 playoff games. Those 11 games, how many of those you say, thank God we had Aaron Rodgers, won against the Cowboys? And you take away game.
He beat us pretty well.
He led the drive down the end with the pass on the sideline to the tight end. I can't remember his name. To get them in field goal range, right? No. The one on the sideline, right?
Oh,
but whatever.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I could see him in my mind, but I can't remember his name. Right, but whatever. But I mean,
Mercedes Lewis.
Yes, I think it is. It might not be. No, it's not him, but it might be somebody else. Well, whatever, right? That's the only game, right? You look at the game. He should have lost the game at home against the Cowboys when Dez Bryant had the catch that was caught overturned, right? I'm looking at Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes winning the games for them. Aaron Rodgers is probably the MVP, and he had 229 yards and a touchdown. Okay, wasn't terrible, but he didn't win. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, listen, the problem with the Packers was the special teams. Okay, they said it all season.
Right.
They are ranked the worst special teams in the league. You got a blocked punt. You got a blocked kick that probably would have, you know, if they would have got that kick at the end, that would have tied the game, right? And then on that kick to win the game for the 49ers, you had 10 guys on the field. Their special teams is horrific, right? So, but every year it's the same thing. It's not Aaron Rodgers that loses the game. It's the defense, or it's the special teams, or it's the lack of weapons, or it's the coaching,
mm-hmm.
or it's Mike McCarthy. It's never Aaron Rodgers. But Aaron Rodgers is never the guy that gets them over and says, you know, despite the special teams, despite the defense, despite the coaching, I got them to win. That's why
Aaron Rodgers. That's what Tom Brady
Aaron
has
Rodgers,
done. That's what other guys
exactly.
have done.
Exactly. Patrick Mahomes can do it. Josh Allen almost did it. Tom Brady's made a career of doing it. Aaron Rodgers will go down as one of the top.
Josh Allen.
Right, but
this game kind of counts.
But Josh Allen wasn't the reason why they lost the game, right?
No,
Aaron
exactly
Rodgers will go
counts.
Down as one of the greatest quarterbacks we have ever seen. But I will never, ever put him ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of, like, Peyton Manning. I don't think he might not be top. He's barely top three in his organization. If you looked at the three quarterbacks that won Super Bowls, I'll take Bart Starr over any of those two any day of the week. He's a winner. Bart Starr was a winner. 30 years, they had two quarterbacks. Two of the quarterbacks you would arguably put in the top 10. They got three Super Bowl appearances and two Super Bowl wins with Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre in 30 years. My case.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, man. I definitely want to agree with you there. Seth, man, you've been awfully quiet back there in the cut, man. Talk to me, man. San Francisco gets a 3-point dub at Green Bay's expense yet again. That makes them 4-0 against the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs, man. Talk to me about it. How do you feel?
Oof, Barry's fired up over there. I like it. I like the energy. But no, I mean, I agree with everything just said. I mean, yeah, Rodgers, like Barry just said, Josh Allen put them in a position to win yesterday. I mean, their defense couldn't stop a nosebleed towards the end of the game or, you know, for most of the game.
Yeah.
And he just continuously brought them down the field, made big throws. I mean, he put them in a position to win. Aaron Rodgers, not so much. If you want to be considered one of the greatest quarterbacks, you got to find a way to get more than one touchdown. Home game, you know, play big, you know, first round bye, he came up small. I mean, even just, you know, looking back at the, you know, the play-by-play, I mean, they got, there was, you know, the turnover, Mercedes Lewis fumbled, and then after that, three and out. Another next possession, six plays and a punt.
But even halftime, going into halftime, you know, you had a first down at San Francisco's 14. I mean, punch one in there. He gets sacked. They spike it. Field goal gets blocked. I mean, you put a touchdown in there. That's going to put a little bit more pressure on San Francisco. And even, you know, in the second half, again, their first possession in the second half, three and out. You know, field goal at the end of the third, but, you know, then, of course, you know, we said the block punt, you know, which led to that touchdown. And then the next series after that, three and out, punted away. San Francisco comes down, kicks the winning field goal. I mean, again, it's just, you got to come up big in a game like that if you want to be considered one of the greats. You have to find a way to punch them in. I mean, the weather, you can't say anything about the weather. They're used to that stuff. So you're on your home field. You're used to the conditions. I mean, just, yeah, you got to be better than that. You got to find ways to score with Davante Adams, Aaron Jones, who had a great game. I mean, just, I don't know. It's just usually their play calling on offense is a little more creative, you know, and they're able to get guys into space, but just a really, really tough loss. I'm not totally surprised. San Francisco has just been tough these last couple weeks, and they were, you know, warming up going into the playoffs, but once again, just another early exit for Green Bay. So I don't know.
Oh, I'm shocked. I'm not going to lie. I'm shocked. I mean, I did not expect this particular performance. I figured Green Bay coming off a bye, you're at home. I mean, essentially you dominate that football game. You're getting to Jimmy Garoppolo. He's throwing ducks and offensive line is going down and Josh Norman's coming in the game covering Davante Adams, and we understand that he's barbecue chicken 99% of the time. There was no ounce in my body that thought that San Fran would be able to go into Lambeau and get this particular win. But yet here we are. Quick run around the room real quick. Is Aaron Rodgers done in Green Bay? Villain, I'll go with you first.
Yes.
Seth.
I think so. I think he is. I mean, I think there was a quote after the game the other day when he said he's not interested in hanging around during a rebuild. So I think I read there's something like $40 million over the cap, and they got to re-sign Adams.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. They're going to need some kind of magician over there, but I don't see him sticking around if they're going to be in rebuild mode.
Mr. Harvey.
I think they're 46 and over. And Rodgers is due 44.5.
And that's without
Josh Allen. I mean, that's without Davante Adams being re-signed. So unless they can do some sort of wizard math or something, or figure out a way to make it work, I don't see it happening. I don't think he's back in Green Bay next year.
Lou, what do you think, man? Is Green Bay done with Aaron Rodgers?
He's a goner. He already is a goner. I mean, he didn't want to be there last year, but they came with some kind of offer to make him stay. I don't think anything is going to make him want to come back this year. Like I said yesterday, he's not interested in the rebuild. If that's the case, done.
Well, let me ask you guys this question before we move on.
I didn't get the answer. Villain didn't get the answer.
You said no.
No, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
Oh, Villain.
That wasn't me.
Villain. Is Aaron Rodgers?
No, you do it on purpose. You do it on purpose because you hate me. You know Malik loves the villain, Uncle Villain. Listen, serious.
Wow.
I think, you know what it is, though? What better option does he really have, though? Like, yeah, there's teams out there that he can go to, but listen, if he's thinking about going to the AFC, he's an idiot, right? There's no way. The only team in the AFC I would even contemplate going to is Tennessee, right? If he stays in the NFC, where would you go? Washington? New Orleans? I think he has to run it back, and I think the Packers need to – they have to get creative. But really, I don't know if he comes back to play at all. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. This loss is devastating for his legacy, for his career, and it leaves him with not a lot of options because he really put himself out there like, you need to listen to me. This organization doesn't respect me. You drafted Jordan Love, blah, blah, blah. And the Packers did everything to placate him, and this is what they got, a first-round exit.
So you think that he retires before he suits up in another uniform?
No, I don't think he retires, but I don't know if he would come. I don't know. I don't even know if the Packers would want him back. I think they're ready to blow it up.
I don't think they are ready to blow it up because, like, here's the thing, like, they are in camp, what my man say, cap hell right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but you still
yeah.
have the opportunity to, you got to figure out what you're doing with Davante Adams. I mean, if they're going to tag him,
back.
So be it. I think he goes
yeah.
wherever Rodgers goes. You know what I'm saying? Honestly, for me, I think he goes wherever Rodgers goes. The one team that I'm hearing, you know, besides, you know, obviously Pittsburgh, because we're going to get into every quarterback until we get one, is Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him going
to the AFC. He'd be a fool to go to the AFC, especially if he can't get it done in the playoffs. You think he's going to get it done against those boys? They coming.
I mean,
and my boy Lamar Jackson coming.
don't follow me, sir.
But you know what it is?
Get Davante Adams to go with Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews.
Here's the funny thing. Like, so you're talking about Davante Adams in Baltimore.
They could pay him, right?
They could pay him, definitely. But again,
Baltimore's
got to
get Lamar Jackson another receiver. Here's
my issue with that, okay? A couple years ago, people tried to sign with Baltimore and chose not to because of the system. They fired the defensive coordinator, but they didn't fire the offense. They didn't fire the offensive coordinator. So my position and my opinion is that they're going to try to run this system back again with Lamar Jackson, which means receivers are probably not going to want to sign there because, once again, Lamar Jackson's not a quarterback.
All you got to do is convince one receiver though that Lamar Jackson is. And if he gets another receiver, and then you got Brown as a speed threat, which is what he's designed to be anyway, and then you have Mark Andrews as a tight end with that receiving core, if Lamar Jackson is even a little bit better passer than you think he is, then you could see some pretty dynamic numbers coming out of there because of the multiple threats that he provides at that position.
I just saw an article, and then we'll move on to Sunday's game, where Antonio Brown is talking about potentially trying to get up with Baltimore. Now, that would be scary.
Run.
That would be scary.
Don't do it.
That would be scary. I
don't trust him.
That would be scary.
I don't trust him.
Well, I mean, nobody does, but, I mean, the man's productive on the football field. Well, anyways, with that being said, call the number is 929-477-2759.
Not worth the
30,
not worth the headache.
You got the next 30-some-odd minutes here with your boys here at Sports City, breaking down the weekend that was, man. The next game I'm going to get to, guys, again, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the L.A. Rams. And I'm going to be painfully honest with you, gentlemen. I thought I was watching the Super Bowl in repeat. I really thought that this was going to be Tampa Bay and Tom Brady doing it yet again, coming down from 27-3. I got a text thread going with a bunch of buddies of mine. I'm like, yo, look at this stuff here. And, like, everything started to align. You know, Akers fumbles going into the end zone. When did he ever do that? You know what I'm saying? You snap the ball over – you know, Matthew Stafford's head. Okay, when did that happen? Cooper Kupp fumbled the football. When does Cooper Kupp ever fumble a football? You know what I'm saying? And then Akers fumbles again. Like everything was lining up. And yet the Rams find a way to escape, in my opinion. But 27-30, L.A. Rams hosting the NFC Championship game next week. Matthew Stafford – Applause for you, sir. Clap for you, sir. What you did yesterday was spectacular. You know, completed every ball but 10. You protected the football, 2 touchdowns. You found your eligibles. You were distributing the ball all over the field. Cooper Kupp had 183, including the big one that put him in field goal range. Odell Beckham, you know, did his thing. It seems like, and again, I said this, I think Law said this at some point, whether we was here in the cookout or in the barbershop, that these stars that L.A., you know, got, that L.A. went out and got, had to come up and play big, and they had to play big in games like this. There were so many times that I saw Von Miller in the backfield. There were so many times I saw Aaron Donald in the backfield. Odell Beckham was a contributor. He, you know, 69 yards on six receptions. He had 8 targets. Cooper Kupp, you know, homegrown talent. You go out and you get, you know, Cam Akers back, who, you know, fumbled twice, but again was a contributor to their efforts. Sonny Michel would, you know, chipped in and did what he had to do. So you push all your chips in the middle to go out and beat Tom Brady, to go out and host an NFC Championship game, to potentially play a Super Bowl in your own stadium, and they get it done. We're going to start on the L.A. Rams side. Talk to me about the Rams. How do you feel about that game, man? And, again, Matthew Stafford, salute to you, sir. I'm going to go with Mr. Harvey first, man. Talk to me about the Rams, bro.
Man, I was seeing visions of that Super Bowl all over again as well. This is a game that Tampa, listen, they were overmatched. They were missing pieces on the line. The Rams were able to exploit that. Like you said, Aaron Donald all over the field, Von Miller. They were able to stifle that Bucs offense long enough to really jump up and grab a big lead. They should have been able to walk out of that stadium with a pretty sizable, by a pretty sizable margin, and walk out of there with a pretty easy victory in hand. However, the ghost of Tom Brady is not going to let that happen regardless, and whatever happens, even if, like, the misfortunes just happen. But here's what I'm going to tell you. They went and got Matthews for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
When they needed it last time, they didn't trust Goff anymore, okay? Now, Matthew Stafford also just did exactly what we talked about somebody else not doing. When it came down to it, this team had the ball and a chance to clinch it, even after they let everything, like, even though they had him come all the way back, even though you could have hung your head and then whatever. And there were a couple times in that second half that you saw Matthew Stafford's body language kind of droop a little bit. But pulled himself together, came out, and when the team needed it, made a couple clutch throws, including that big play to Cooper Kupp to get him in field goal range. He made your kick. There are many championship runs that have some sort of crazy fluke moment or something that, some memorable play that go your way so you can pull it out. This is your get-out-of-jail-free card, Rams. You make those kind of mistakes against a team that's already beaten you twice, you're not going to do it again. And if you do advance, I promise you whoever you play in the next round is going to be a team you're going to have to score with. So you ain't going to be able to get away with playing like they did this past weekend to get a couple more wins. But listen, at the end of the day, though, the Rams went on the road, West Coast team traveling east. Sean McVay has had pretty good success doing that as a coach. But they went into Tampa. They knocked off Tom Brady. They sent him home. That hasn't happened to him on a regular basis in the second round of the playoffs. So good on them. And they got a quarterback that, listen, they built this team to beat the Bucs. Now we'll see if they can take care of the other team in their division and get to the Super Bowl. They beat him during the regular season. They beat him again now. And even though Tampa got back into it, I'm convinced still walking away that the better team won the game and the team that's going to compete best for the NFC moving forward won the game. And so big ups to the Rams. And that's hard to say as a Saints fan, man. I didn't want any of these teams to win this weekend, but somebody had to walk out.
I feel you, man. I feel you, man. Mr. Lou, man, what's going on, buddy? Talk to me about this L.A. Rams win. Did Matthew Stafford quiet a couple of haters, or did you expect this type of performance from Matthew Stafford in his first season with the L.A. Rams?
I'll say one thing. It's about time. I mean, Stafford is a good player. He's just been on, you know, a lot of crappy teams, you know, with the, you know, the Lions over the past decade. His time was due. You know, and coming to the Rams, you know, was a smart move. So he shut up a lot of the naysayers finally. And, you know, well worth it. You know, I like Stafford as a quarterback. He just played on such a horrible team for so many years. I mean, you know, he did play with the Lions, and, of course, they are a joke. So that was the right move. And he finally got, you know, got his first playoff win with that. Now he's gonna play for his first NFC championship and maybe head to a Super Bowl. And it's about time.
Definitely, definitely, man. Villain, man, talk to me, man. Matthew Stafford, you know, goes up against your version of a GOAT and pulls off an, you know, an upset. Talk to me about how you feel about the Rams, man.
And see, this is why, like, this is why his argument for Deshaun, Lamar Jackson, because he can't admit that Brady's the GOAT. He can't, I mean, listen, we'll get to it. Like, listen.
Rams.
I got a lot of shit yesterday from TP because I didn't give Stafford credit when he was in Detroit. How give him credit for what? He was on a crappy team that got to the playoffs three times and couldn't win with them. He's on a better team now, and so now you see what kind of talent this guy has. And I never dispersed Stafford. I knew he was a good quarterback. If anything, I gave that guy credit because he was as tough as anybody, right? That guy was always hurt. But he answered the bell. He was accountable. And only if you couldn't drag him out there, he wouldn't play, right? Guy is tough as hell. And you know, he showed his moxie yesterday because the Rams did everything in their power to lose that game. Tom Brady did a great job getting them back in the game, but he had a really good game, but he wasn't the reason why they got back in the game. I think it was more the fact the Rams were choking and were tight. They were tighter than the Titans were. They were trying to not lose that game up by, you know, at 27-3 instead of going at, for their throat and really running their offense and trying to win the game, right? I think, listen, there was a lot of monumental fumbles. The Akers fumble that Sirius talked about that would have made it at least a 30-3 game. The Cooper Kupp fumble, you don't see Akers fumbling again. You know, there was a lot people want to talk about the personal foul, the late hit that should have kept the ball. That's not the rules. They got it right. It didn't impact the game because Brady threw the bomb down the field. I said it in the chat. I said it to you guys. The Rams are the better team. They're more talented at this point because of the injuries that the Bucs has sustained and all that stuff. But the Bucs had Brady, and that's why you couldn't count them out, and that's why it was tied up. But for Matt Stafford to make those two plays to Cooper Kupp and get them into field goal range to win it, he not only bailed them out, but he showed. He's just a talented guy, and I'm just glad that he's on this stage to show what he's got. And listen, he made Sean McVay look like a genius because he basically laid it at the feet of Jared Goff that Super Bowl loss to the Patriots. I can't win with this guy. I need winners. He traded for Stafford, and now he's back in the championship game. So. But, you know, they got a lot of work to do because San Francisco's beat them twice this year. San Francisco, we didn't give them credit against the Packers for what they did. That defense played lights out against two really good offenses. They're a tough defense to match up against because they can rush with four and they can drop seven back. So the Rams have better show up. They better not come tight again. But give the Rams credit. They slayed the dragon. Now Tom Brady, we don't know what the future holds for him.
I wish he had his whole team to go down with so that he there would be no doubt. But give the Rams credit, give Stafford credit.
Definitely. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I will say this. The other thing the Rams have to make sure they do is whatever they need to do, whether it's cheating or chipping off or extra DB, just make sure you stunt with that defensive front the way they were stunting or whatever. They got to shore up the second level of that defense against San Francisco because that San Francisco has exposed that in the Rams twice this year. The second game was closer, though, and as the Saints found out last year, it's very difficult if those teams are close in talent to beat a team three times in a row.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Seth, man, talk to me, man. This L.A. Rams team pulled off, I guess you want to call it an upset, and beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. Talk to me. How do you feel about it?
No, I mean, they tried to do whatever they could do to give that game away. I mean, you're watching it, and they were just absolutely dominating them. I mean, four turnovers. They were up 27-3, then they turned the ball over three more times. I mean, it was just, you know, one thing after another, and you could almost feel like Brady, there's like some kind of like magic aura around him where it's like, you know, you know that the game's never quite over, you know, that there's going to be something crazy is going to happen that gives him another chance, you know, and then Akers fumbles inside, what was it, the 20-25, and you're like, this can't be happening. Like, is he really going to do this again? You know, Brady coming back. But, I mean, the offense looked great, you know, for the better part of the game for the Rams. Cooper Kupp is just insanely talented. I mean, they have good offensive weapons. You hope that Akers can shake off those couple fumbles. I mean, I think if they're going to, you know, move on to the Super Bowl, I think they're going to need him, you know, and you got to have confidence in him. It's tough after the two fumbles, but look, Sony Michel's been great, you know, for the stretch run of the season. You know, I don't know that they ever imagined he could have done this well, but it's a good running back duo, and, you know, you throw in Beckham, who's been a great addition to the team. You know, him and Kupp and even Van Jefferson, who hasn't done much in the playoffs, but he's a good player too. And Tyler Higbee is, you know, contributing again, and he's running some nice routes, getting open. So, I mean, it's credit to Stafford. Like Mike was just saying before, I think it was Mike or maybe it was Lou, was saying, I mean, he had some terrible teams in Detroit, and he is a good quarterback, yeah. I feel like. So, I mean, he's finally got a good defense, you know, that can win him games, you know, or help to win games. He's not, you know, having a defense giving up 30 points a game. So I think this might finally be his time. And I think it's going to be a great matchup against the Niners. I mean, it's tough to beat a team three times in the season, but it's going to be a good matchup, I think. And, you know, again, you got to get pressure on Stafford. You know, you give him all day to throw and he's probably going to pick him apart, but we'll see how it goes. But I'm looking forward to that game.
Definitely, man. I'm going to flip it over to the Buccaneers side of things. Again, they battled back but came up significantly short. What's going on with Tampa Bay, man? They really wasn't able to generate much pressure until things started to unravel. They only got to Matthew Stafford twice. Tom Brady was smacked around. The offensive line was beat up. You know, talk to me about Tampa Bay. Lou, I'll come right back to you, man. Talk about Tampa Bay side of things.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was me. Okay, repeat that again.
Yeah, I was talking about Tampa Bay. Yes. You know, Tom Brady was getting beat up a little bit.
Finally.
Offensive line was having Offensive line was having significant troubles blocking. Receiver-wise, you know, Tom Brady looked lost out there. But talk to me about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers side of things and how this went completely wrong for one of the greatest players that ever played a game.
No, he's a sore loser, first of all. I mean, you knew, though,
with time left on the clock, you knew Brady was going to give one last shot, you know, to tie it up, and of course he did. You know, you never should give Brady any time left over to pull some last minute heroics, and unfortunately that happened. But I was surprised at the outcome, because usually when you only had that much time left, you would, you know, just take any down and send it to overtime. That was not the case, so that was not a big surprise right there. And Tampa ended up losing the game. So Brady's run, you know, for a seventh Super Bowl title is not going to happen. Tampa Bay was trying to go for a third straight Super Bowl. That's gone. That is gone.
What?
And I for one, is not a Tampa Bay fan or a Brady fan. I'm glad it is not going to happen.
Great.
Sorry about that. I was sitting there talking on mute, man. Tampa Bay would have been going for the second consecutive, not the third, but I kind of get where you're coming from. Mr. Harvey, man, I'll come to you, man. Tampa Bay, man, Tom Brady was beat up like he stole something. They really wouldn't start. The receiver wasn't really clicking until late. But talk to me about Tampa Bay side of things, man. Where did it all go wrong with Bruce Arians and that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team?
I think the biggest thing, man, is just health. I mean, listen, you lose Chris Godwin, who's been one of the most effective receivers. You got Fournette back, but you were still missing two starters on your offensive line, on a line that, I mean, you really needed those guys. The Saints gave you the blueprint on how to attack Tampa, and the Rams have a fantastic defensive front and were able to exploit those weaknesses. And so to me with Tampa, I think it's helped. I mean, I think we got to see what happens moving forward. But, like, I think in the last couple of years, Leonard Fournette has really grown and matured as a back to turn into a very good running back. You still got Godwin and Evans, and regardless of if you keep Gronk, great, but you still got other weapons at the tight end position. And there are still some players on that defense. I still don't understand. First of all, the Rams are the better team because of Tom Brady and who he is. That's why they were in the game with a chance. There are a couple of calls that leave me shaking my head, like on one of the big plays to Cup down the field. Cup was wide open because they ran a corner blitz. And you mean to tell me that you're going to blitz the corner that's covering Cooper Cup? Right. I know Todd Bowles has been talked about as far as another possible head coaching hearing in some places. I would love to hear the answer to that, and I don't think anybody interviewing him should interview him without asking the question, what the hell were you thinking on that play? But I think the better team won. I think the mystique of Tom Brady and whatever that he, you know, has – I mean, listen, when it comes to Super Bowls and rings and this, like, before him it was Joe Montana. He surpassed what he's done. And so when it comes to winning in the postseason, I know Sirius, you disagree, but, you know, he's the one that gets to eat the grass as the goat. But so it's going to be very difficult to knock them off. Sometimes even the football gods, if you will, try to help him. Once again, I am on any team to win, but it didn't hurt my feelings to see Tampa Bay lose, especially since they just came off a Super Bowl title. I mean, good for the Rams. I think the interesting thing to me is before last year, I mean, not only did Tom Brady win his seventh ring and win his second team, it was the first team to play a Super Bowl in their home stadium in the history of the NFL. And they were able to win it in their home stadium as the away team. That being said, you could possibly see it happen a second year in a row after it's never happened before in the history of the league.
Definitely, definitely. Before we move on, we do got another caller in queue, calling out of the 951 Erico. What's your name, man? We're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. How do you feel this evening?
What's up, Sirius? It's your boy Brian, Breaking News Hughes. Just wanted to chime in. I got into the kitchen a little late, but I've been enjoying the convo.
What's going on, breaking news, man? Talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. What went all the way wrong for them to the point where they were bounced at home?
Well, the bottom line is I think the previous caller hit the nail on the head. It was a bad matchup. I sent Ty my picks, my Sports City Chef picks, if you will, and the only game I got wrong was the Titans. And the reason why I picked the Rams to win on the road is because the Bucs' offensive line is pretty banged up, and they were without their best offensive lineman in Tristan Wirfs. Aaron Donald and company, and you're not at full strength, and we all know that Brady is not a mobile quarterback. And I literally told a friend of mine that's a Tampa Bay fan out here, I said, legitimately, the shot you guys have is to try to hold up, screen game, and do not fall behind. And literally, you could not have scripted a worse start to the game to be down 27-3. But with that said, Sirius, the Rams are who we thought they were. And if Ty was here, he would definitely be chiming in. Matthew Stafford is the guy that everybody thinks he is. You know, Aaron Rodgers kind of shrinks in big-time situations. Matt Stafford kind of tended to, I mean, he almost wanted to give that game away. And, you know, the team almost wanted to give that game away. I don't know how you spot a team 24 points basically at half and literally get into a situation where you've got to air the ball out at the end of the game to try and kick a field goal to win it. Like, you know, I understand that it's kudos to them for winning on the road. I know it's tough, but, man, it's a tough, tough situation. You know, like I said, kudos to the Rams, but I personally think that the Rams are the exact blueprint to beat a team like Tampa Bay.
I definitely agree with you there. Before we move on to the last game, talk to me a little bit about Matthew Stafford and the L.A. Rams. You know, you kind of touched on it when you came in. You know, what was completely right for them, man, as opposed to what went wrong?
Well, I think what went right is they got up early, and even though they were only averaging like 3 yards a carry, if you look, they had 30-plus rushes in the game. And, you know, everybody talks about the script for the Niners. It's not the script for the Niners. Listen, McVay, McFleur, Shanahan, all these dudes have a similar offensive philosophy. It doesn't matter who their quarterback is. You want to run the ball and set up play action off of that run. And even if you're only gaining 3.5 yards a carry, you're taking a ton of pressure off your quarterback when you get into a situation where you're not playing from behind. There's very, very few quarterbacks, and Tom Brady is definitely one of those guys, even at the ripe old age of 44. There's very few quarterbacks in this league that can consistently play from behind with no threat of a running game and really have a legitimate chance of winning. And I think that was legitimately the difference in the game. If you look at the game against the Niners, week 18, they completely abandoned the running game in the second half. They got nervous. McVay got a little ahead of himself, if you will. And I think that was the difference. I think that they stuck to the ground game, even though it wasn't really working. 3.5 yards of carry is not great, but it's enough to keep the chains moving and stay ahead of the sticks, if you know what I mean.
I respectfully disagree with one thing that he said, bro. I don't put the blame on Stafford for these guys getting back in this game. He didn't cause Cooper Kupp to fumble that ball. He didn't cause Cam Akers to fumble either. There were some other things that happened in this game, and so I can get what you're saying. The Rams are who we thought they were, and they tried to cough it up and give it away because we have seen the Rams struggle and beat themselves throughout the season. So I totally get that part of your point about the Rams are who we thought, but that's not on Stafford, bro.
Like, he might have missed some throws, but every quarterback misses some over the course of the game. But that wouldn't have been on staff.
And you know what? That's probably a fair point. I'm just talking more about the Rams played tight, and even Stafford played tight. If you look at the way he was playing in the fourth quarter, especially early on, compared to the way they were playing in the first half, and I understand they were having success, but they were playing really tight. They started playing to not lose as opposed to win. And I get what you're saying. I know Stafford didn't have any of those, you know, like head-scratching turnovers. He missed some throws out there. That last drive, he doesn't make that drive, and it goes into overtime. We're probably having a whole different conversation.
But, you know, breaking news, I don't think that's on Stafford. I think that's on the coaching staff. They played four corners North Carolina basketball trying to hold the clock out and tried to run the ball against one of the best running defenses in the league to try and get out of there with the win. They felt the pressure and the kind of, like, tighten them up a little bit, in my opinion, because to your point, to Mike's point, Stafford didn't get burned by Mike Evans on that fade pattern. You know what I mean? Like, that was the defense that kind of tightened up a little bit, too. They felt the pressure. They saw Tom Brady coming. They started missing tackles. They started not covering up Gronkowski and Leonard Fournette out of the backfield. Like, listen, that defense played lights out in the first quarter. They were getting after Tom Brady. That, you know, Floyd had a great game. Donald was getting pressure. Von Miller turned back the clock. The second half, they got to him, but then, you know, when Tom Brady started getting time, he started picking them apart, and Scotty Miller started going off. Like, you know, I can't put that on Matt Stafford. I mean, and to answer Sirius's question, I think the Bucs did everything they possibly could to win that game, but they just didn't have enough. They didn't have the weapons. They didn't have, you know, Tristan Wirfs is more valuable than anybody realized to protect Tom Brady. And they give the Rams credit in the first half. They exploited it. They put Donald over the tackle. They had Floyd coming in on fresh legs. They had, you know, Von Miller. They were able to get pressure. If you get Tom Brady, if you get up in his face and get pressure on him, he can't handle it. And that's the old blueprint from the Giants Super Bowl. Like, you know, he can't handle that type of pressure. Nobody really can. So, but the Bucs just didn't have enough. The defense, they give the defense credit. They came to play. They forced turnovers, Dominican Sue with the big strip. But at the end, you know, to your point, Todd Bowles on that last drive, I think he thought they were going to pack it in and play for overtime. And he tried to come after Matt Stafford, and Stafford burned him.
Well, yeah, he had a hell of a drive.
Yeah.
Here's my only retort to what you guys are talking about. You know, that so many times we sat here, especially when you started dealing with, you know, the Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl and things of that nature, where, you know what I'm saying, if you have incomplete passes, you stop the clock, and, you know what I'm saying, we sat here and killed Kyle Shanahan for not running the football in the Super Bowl and throwing the football with Matthew Stafford, with Matt Ryan, and then the Patriots come back into winning that. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So I kind of see essentially where, you know, McVay was coming from by trying to run the football and trying to shorten the game, so to speak, because we've seen the flip side. You see the flip side. If you throw the football and you have drops and, you know, whatever the case may be, then that's more time. You know what I'm saying? Call the numbers 929-477-2759. We got about 5 minutes left, and we didn't even get to Kansas City and Buffalo. So I'm going to talk to the people upstairs, and you may have to do an hour show tomorrow just to break down that game and everything in its entirety. But with that being said, oh, okay, so the people upstairs blessed me with some more time. So let's go ahead and break down that particular game before we get out of here this evening. Kansas City, Buffalo, classic show for the ages. I'm not even sure where to begin with this one. Villain, you the co-host, man. You know, talk. Let's have a meeting real quick. Where do you want to go with this, bro?
I mean, I could just talk about
the game in Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen are going to be the Brady Manning rivalry for years to come. You know, I think a lot of people this season kind of said Josh Allen got the coin, but didn't really, you know, hadn't played like it this year, hadn't really lived up to that big contract. Two playoff games, he earned that money. That's why you paid him that money, okay? I got to give him his flowers. He did not lose that game. And it's funny because Patrick Mahomes is he's a brilliant quarterback. He's the best quarterback pound for pound in the league right now, right? You know, there's a lot of good quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers is the MVP. Tom Brady had an unbelievable season. But a lot of people, if you had one quarterback to take, a lot of people would take Patrick Mahomes, right? Patrick Mahomes played a brilliant game. Sidearm throws, taking what the defense gave him, throwing underneath into cover two, hitting the slants, hitting the in routes, hitting the guys out of the backfield, not forcing it downfield, making the right throws, the right reads, and all that good stuff. But Josh Allen had to do everything in his power to win the game. The way Josh Allen had to score compared to the way Mahomes had to score was different. Mahomes had to throw in route to Hill, and Hill had to race like 60 yards down the field to get the touchdown. Josh Allen's running for his life, getting away from pass rushes on third down, running to extend plays to get first downs on third down, running, scrambling for first downs, running the ball, throwing the ball. I think in my mind, he had a better game than Mahomes. Mahomes won the game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not disrespecting Mahomes in any way, serious. I'm saying how Josh Allen had to win, had to play this game to keep the Bills in the game, is just short of phenomenal. And that's why I give Aaron Rodgers so much grief, because you look at how Josh Allen played that game yesterday, and then you look at Aaron Rodgers, it's just night and day. Josh Allen earned his coin. He's got to go through this. He's got to go through the Chiefs to get to that Super Bowl. He's going to get there eventually. I got nothing but respect for Josh Allen.
You know what? I'm gonna say my comments for last, because I'll say my comments for last on that. Mr. Harvey, talk to me, man. Kansas City, Buffalo, take it where you want to take it. There's a lot to unpack here, so I really can't spoon feed this one, man. Talk to me about this game late yesterday evening.
I agree with everything that Barry just said about Josh Allen. Like, listen, he earned his stripes to me with his performance in this game. He had a career year last year. At times he looked a little, you know, up and down this year. But to me, like, he really earned his stripes the way that he played. I mean, I could see these two guys definitely being two of the faces of the next generational battles at quarterback in the league, if they continue to build right around them. Listen, man, I mean, we talk about it all the time. There are 20-plus teams every year that wishes they had a franchise quarterback. And sometimes you don't realize how good you have it until that guy's gone, right? Like, but both of these teams, I wasn't sure that Josh Allen was that guy for a little while. I am now. Listen, man, it's a shame either team had to lose this game. I saw something the other day that said they're just going to cancel the rest of the playoffs and let the Chiefs and Bills play a best out of seven winner gets the Super Bowl. I'm like, I would sign up for that. listen, these are two of the best. I agree with you on Mahomes right now. I think he is the best quarterback in the league. And I think that he's doing things that you have never seen done. So is Burrow, by the way, and some other guys. But you've never seen a guy within one game of a Super Bowl in each of his first 4 years as a quarterback, and he's got a chance to go to 3 out of 4 now. That's ridiculous. Mm. And so he sat for, you know, a year or so behind Alex Smith, but a special, special talent. Like, makes you understand why even when they had Drew Brees stopping by the building on the night of the draft, the Saints told Drew Brees, if this guy's here when we pick, we're drafting him, just so you know, and you're fully clear. Like, so, and you understand why. Mahomes is a special talent. I've been saying it since he came in the league. And it just makes me excited as a football fan to know that we're getting other guys that are going to be able to raise that level of play. You know, and it's coming close enough with these two teams that it can make the difference with somebody jumping around or somebody making a play. But these two quarterbacks yesterday were 60 for 81 between the two. Basically a 75% completion percentage for 700-plus yards and 9 touchdowns. Give you an idea how good Josh Allen played, as we said earlier tonight. 9 touchdowns in 2 games, no interceptions, and he's going home. So sometimes you just don't know how it's going to pan out. It's a shame either one of these teams had to lose. We said this going in that this was going to be a de facto AFC championship game. And, listen, I don't care what round it's in, this game will be remembered as one of the best. And what a way to cap off a fantastic playoff weekend of football, one of the best that we've had ever. But what a way to cap it off with the fireworks in this game. We confidently told everybody it was going over on all of our shows. It did. But it didn't just go over the point spread, my fellow chefs. It went over anybody's expectations of what to expect from a football game. It was a joy to watch. It had people on the edge of their seats. And it doesn't matter who you were a fan of. If you did not enjoy this game, or your mouth didn't drop open, or your jaw didn't drop because of some of the things that you saw, and you weren't riveted to your television towards the end of this game and how it turned out, you don't love football.
I definitely agree with you there, man. This game lived up to the hype. And before I give my position on it, Seth, man, you hung in there with us. Go ahead and talk to me about this game, man. I can't even really make heads or tails out of it, man. But, you know, your position on it, what you were thinking, feeling, some stuff that stood out to you when you was watching the Kansas City Chiefs versus Buffalo Bills game yesterday evening.
All right, well, since I don't want to repeat everything that was just said, because I can't really say it any better. And, you know, I'd just be repeating everything that Barry and Mike just said. So I want to go a different route, just take a quick minute. I want to see what you guys, if you want to just go around, pass it around, see what, because the offenses were ridiculous. We know that. I mean, it was just a unreal game. And I think that even Tom Brady, given 13 seconds, I don't even think that he could engineer a drive that, you know, will get you down in field goal position. I mean, that was just incredible. So my question to you guys, and if everybody wants to chime in, where, you know, the fault lie on Buffalo on that last drive? Do you put that on the defense? Do you put that on the coaching for not, you know, calling the right plays or the right strategy? I mean, I've heard a couple of analysts say, one person said, you know, how about just don't even rush anybody. Take everybody off the line, drop him back, you know, make him kill a few seconds, you know, sitting back there and completing a pass. You know, and then another person I heard said, well, what if you just held the receivers right off the line, take the penalty, it would kill, you know, 5-6 seconds, whatever it is, and, you know, you wouldn't give up that long completion to Kelsey. And I forget who else got the other catch, but I want to know what you guys think. Was this Buffalo's defense's fault, or were the coaches, did they choke in the situation? What do you guys think?
You know, Mr. Harvey, I'll go to you first with that particular question. You know, what would you do differently there?
I mean, you can try to body up. I mean, honestly, though, I probably would have double covered Kelsey, and I would have double covered Kelsey and Hill and made you beat me. Even though you probably are, I'm not going to let one of those guys be the person that beats me. I try to take away your best weapons the best I can. But Mahomes can just make throws that others can't, and has a knack for it. I mean, we've seen We've seen it done a couple of times by different teams, at least something close to that with a little bit of time left, but this was just uncanny on both sides. They were just playing at a really high level, and sometimes a certain throws are made or things are done. Like, sometimes you just got to tip your hat. You made a play. But I do think I would have double covered or and are bodied up and taken one penalty. They're not going to restart the clock on that. But, I mean, you got to be careful how you do that. You never know how it's going to be caught or if it's a spot or whatever. So, I mean, you definitely have to be careful how you do that. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You hope to cover him and you hope he's not going to make that throw. But I would have tried to do everything I could to take their best two weapons away. Hartman made a couple plays and whatever, but at the end of the day, if you beat me with McCole Hartman, fine. But I don't want you to beat me with your two pro bowls.
Yep.
Dylan, man, I come to you next, man. What would you have done differently? Dylan. Talking,
sorry, my bad. I was sitting there talking. I was just lamenting, and you know, listen. It's easy to be cast in hindsight, right? And like Mike said, and say, "Oh, because that didn't work, I would have done this," right? But at the end of the day, they got out coached. Sean McDermott got out coached by a veteran coach in Andy Reid. Andy Reid had this team prepared. They didn't panic. They knew with 13 seconds, this is what we were going to do. They were calm about it. And listen, Sean McDermott after the game said basically to the effect that we didn't execute the kickoff right. What do you mean? They kicked it into the end zone. So obviously the play was to squib it. You take 5-6 seconds off the clock. They don't run two plays. They only get one play in a Hail Mary, if that, right? So, but you're saying they didn't
execute.
Although
if they down it, though, can they down it? If they down it, does any time come off the clock? If he just picks it up and downs it off a squib?
But no, if it hits,
I think it's
if
when
it
the
hits
guy touches
the ground,
it, right?
If it hits the ground, the clock starts, right? Regardless, right?
Yeah,
no?
But
I don't know.
If the guy doesn't touch it,
I think.
You know, then I don't think
it happens. It doesn't touch it. Touched.
Yeah, but either way, you don't kick it into the – you only kick it into the end zone if you're trying to preserve time, if you need the ball back. The Bills thought they won the game. They didn't think with 13 seconds that they could tie the game up. That was their first problem. That's coaching. They got out-coached. The defense, you should have dropped 9 and rushed 2, fine, whatever. But they played like they thought the game was over and there was 13 seconds left. That was the problem. They got out-coached. Andy Reid had his team prepared. I mean, there's no way that Andy Reid's not squibbing that kick if the roles were reversed, right? So McDermott, for everything that he's done this year, he's a terrific coach. Leslie Frazier had the number one defense. They got pushed around not a lot of people can stop Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, right? But the number one defense, you shouldn't be letting them go down the field in like 50-something yards in 13 seconds. So, I mean,
yeah.
But that's coaching. So, the coaching, they got out-coached. That at the end of the game, at the end of the day, you had two great quarterbacks, two great offenses. Whoever had the ball was going to win. Listen, Bills fans, Bills Mafia are going to cry about the overtime rules. People are saying overtime rules, they should have got another possession. I agree, but that's not why they lost the game. They lost the game because the coaches didn't put them in the right position to win. They didn't squib the kick. They didn't call the right plays on defense. It shouldn't have got to that point. 13 seconds. I mean, we've seen Aaron Rodgers drive them down. Like I said, the Cowboys game with time on the clock, right? Look, very limited. 13 seconds with timeouts to get into field goal range is unacceptable. It should have never went to overtime. They got out coached. What's that?
Yeah, they had all three timeouts there.
Exactly.
13 seconds.
So at that point, you got to
you got to prepare your team, Sirius, right? With three timeouts. You can't let them throw the ball. You can't let them do that. They got out coached. They got out coached. Well,
they
get, it's
and
a
they
shame.
Have timeout so they can go middle. They can go middle of the field. They didn't have
exactly.
The sidelines. You can't leave the middle.
Exactly.
Wide open.
So,
yeah, I think Kelsey,
so if you
Kelsey
know if you
middle,
know that, right, Seth? If you know that, why don't you only rush two and drop those two guys to double cover their two
double
best
Kelsey.
Players
yeah.
and,
yep.
and take them
yep.
away? That's what I mean.
Yep.
That's coaching. Hey, 13 seconds left. They got three timeouts. They can throw it anywhere in the field. They got to throw it quick and get down. So that's coaching, man. That's coaching.
So this particular game for me was an instant classic. I posted on my social media, you know, like everybody else alluded to, that this was another, you know, Manning-Brady-esque type of game. You know, other quarterbacks, Aikman and, you know, Steve Young and stuff like that, where it was just iconic, and I expect this to be the norm going forward in AFC. And you know, those of you guys that follow my Facebook, I flipped it on its ear and was talking about what the Steelers need to do. But I was in awe watching this game, like from start to finish. Like, and for me, I think Buffalo lost it more than Kansas City won it. Again, this is the Barry's point, you know, when it comes to coaching. You know, you have a guy score four touchdowns in Gabriel Davis. You got Josh Allen making chicken salad out of chicken crap. How many fourth downs and medium to large did they convert on that drive? The defense, Kansas City defense couldn't stop them at all, and again, you lose the ball game. Again, I'm going to tip my cap to Kansas City because, again, they're a great team, and they made the plays that they needed to make to win the ball game, but this game was over. This game was over, and for some odd reason, McDermott, you know, whatever, you know, lost common sense. I will say this, and everybody's talking about overtime, and I'm going to close the show with that. You know, the overtime, in my opinion, I think they're going to leave it alone. I think they're going to leave it alone because it took them forever and a year to honestly change it from the sudden death. If there's going to be any changes made to overtime, this is what I would honestly do, okay? And I've had a good amount of time there to think about it. I would do what the MLB does. I would do what Major League Baseball does. So we all know what they do, you know, end of the game, end of the ninth inning, visitor's team goes back out there. If they score a run or whatever the case may be, the opponent has opportunity to match them. You know what I'm saying? I would do away with the coin toss. I would do away with the touchdown, sudden death rule. That way both teams have the opportunity to possess the football. Both defenses have to go out there and play. I think that will probably be the fairest about it. The only difference is, let's say the visitor's team turns the ball over and then, you know, you can give yourself a field goal because you beat that on possession or if it's, you know, pick six or whatever it may be. I think that would be the fairest way to go about it. There's been a bunch of people talking about doing the college rule, and I think that's crazy, in my opinion, for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, you put the ball on the 25-yard line in this league, you're already in field goal range. Then you start talking about going for 2 points and things of that nature as it gets older. I just think that, you know, this is a brutal game. The reason why some of the rules are in place is to protect the players. You start playing crazy non-overtime games. Penn State lost to Illinois that way, so pissed me off. You start talking about playing a whole extra quarter and doing some other stuff. Again, people get themselves hurt. But what's your position on it? And we can shut it out in the show with this, Mr. Harvey, on the overtime situation.
Well, I mean, I think if you even though you might still be in field goal range if you started at the 25-yard line, you still get the same number of possessions. So you could be, you know, if one team is able to score, then the other team has to match them with the end zone. I know college has done that, and then college switched to, like, the two-point play rule after the second overtime. I do wish – listen, the same thing happened to Pat Mahomes 2 years ago, right? And that he went into an overtime game in the AFC title game, and he didn't get a chance to touch the ball. And they probably would have beat New England if they had touched the ball first, the way New England – I mean, New England was having trouble stopping those guys. You guys saw it. So, I mean, I think in the end, it was because of Brett Favre not getting a chance against the Saints that caused him to really start looking into and changing that rule. Because it was their media darling, so to speak, not getting a shot at the Super Bowl. But that being said, I wish there was a way that both teams did actually get the same number of possessions and a chance to touch the ball.
You know what, Seth? I come to you, man. This overtime rule is going to be scrutinized and talked about for the next couple of weeks, maybe into the offseason. I know it's going to be on the competition committee's ledger to speak about, but, you know, what would you do to fix it, if you could fix it?
You know, I don't even have a good answer. I've read about all these different ideas tossed around, and, you know, some people said, oh, you know, play a full overtime, whoever's winning at the end of that, you know, wins. But, again, you're playing another 15 minutes of football, and what if it's still tied after that? You're going to keep going? I mean, these guys, you could end up playing, you know, 30 more minutes, you know, after playing a full game. So I don't know. I'm not sure that there is, you know, a completely fair way. I do think that each team should have a chance, though. I mean, again, and watching the game yesterday, you just knew the second that Kansas City won the coin toss that Mahomes was going to lead them down and finish the game off right there. There was no doubt in my mind. But I don't know. I don't know that there is a right way, you know, outside of giving each team a shot. But, again, if you give each team a shot, one scores a touchdown, the next scores a touchdown, you could be going back and forth, you know, for another hour. And, you know, now you're looking at a four-hour-plus football game. I don't know. I really don't know what the right solution is.
Bill, and I'll come to you, man. This overtime thing is going to be talked about at length between now and next time we kick this thing off in September. Go ahead and fix it for me, man, if you could potentially – wave your magic goofy villain wand and fix it. What would you do to fix it?
First of all, it'll be a mask. Second of all, I kind of agree. I think you want both offenses to get the ball regardless if they score a field goal or a touchdown. I think that's the only rule I would change, and then whoever gets the stop wins. But, I mean, you know, the overtime rules only come into play when there's overtime. I mean, if you win the game in regulation, we're not talking about it. We're only talking about it because this is one of the great playoff games we've ever seen, and it was unfortunate that Josh Allen didn't get to touch the ball at the end of the game with 13 seconds or in the overtime. But, you know, listen, you don't get to – it's not like they lost the coin toss and then the defense didn't get to go out there and play. The defense got to go out there and tried to stop, you know, the Chiefs, and they didn't do it. So, I mean, I always look at it from that perspective. But, yeah, in my mind, I think both offenses should get a chance. But you know what? You're not going out there, you know, running, like, against a scout team or against nobody, and you're just running plays. Like, the defense gets a shot, too. They can come up and make a stop. So, that's kind of how I look at it.
You know what? I actually agree with you a little bit, too. However, with that being said, you know, it's weird, man. You know, you start talking about the overtime, and I think the thing is this. I mean, as a Steeler fan, we played an overtime game this year, and this does only come up when, you know, it's a classic like that, like Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Tom Brady going at it for that AFC Championship game that one year. And obviously this one that just took place yesterday, and, you know, there are other overtime games that have ended this way. I do believe something needs to be done. I do believe in rewarding the home team for being at home. But, again, the goal is to win it in regulation, and I think the more teams do that, the more this becomes a moot issue. With that being said, we're going to go ahead and pack it up, man. Steph, man, thanks for kicking it with us for tonight, man. Go ahead and give us a plug and a close out as we get out of here on the Division Wrap-Up Show.
All right, guys. I had nothing to plug here. Just enjoying, as always, talking sports with the Sports City Chefs.
Thanks so much, man. Don't be a stranger, man. Check us out. We'll be back in the building on Wednesday with the Callers Cookout, man. Zellin, you know what to do, man. Give us a plug in the closet as we get out of here, man.
Yeah, man. Listen, sportscitychef.com. Get to the website. Got some articles up there. Finally finished my Baseball Hall of Fame article, so I'm probably handicap that when they make the announcement tomorrow who's in, who's not. Got a lot of good articles up there about the Giants, the Knicks. You encourage everybody to go in there and read. You know, the chefs are going to be writing, hopefully a little bit more. So got sponsors on the way, so we gotta eat. We got to make sure we got some content for these sponsors. So, a lot of good stuff going on, man. Sports City, we're doing great things. Shout out to the barbershop. They do good things over there as well. Sirius, I don't hate you. I just hate the kind of person that you are, just a hateful wannabe villain. I'm gonna come visit you, and I'm gonna save Marie. Uncle Villain's coming. I'm gassing up the pacer. I'm coming down there to rescue Uncle Villain's on the way. All right, later, boys. Love you.
Yo, the shot. He was like, yo. Hopefully the chef's getting there. Stop writing, Zoom. I hate you so much. Yo, man, it's your boy Sirius repping that 412-703, man. Such a pleasure to be here with you guys, man. Thanks to everybody for picking this, man, coming on and talking about this divisional round, matchup with us, man. We'll be back in the building, Lord willing, on Wednesday with the Crossover Cafe. Definitely, like my man Zellin said, go ahead and get to the website, the blogs, and YouTube for the finger foods and everything that we're doing, man. Shout out to everybody who's walking with us, sponsors who, you know, trying to partner with us and things of that nature. Mike Harvey dropped off, but definitely, man, continue to check out the barbershop over there on Clubhouse, man. I think we're about 5K strong right now, pushing to get to 6, man. And honestly, throughout the content that we bring you guys to on a regular basis, man, definitely check us out. With that being said, tell a friend, it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now we know.
Sports City, Sports City, Chef. 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 Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef. Yeah. Cabbage. Taj.
Woo! Connecticut.